Like one, when I, yeah, one pot, or sorry, wait, one cup.
See, yeah, I'm wondering if you're drinking 3 pots of coffee a day.
No, just like a cup, yeah, just like a
Oh.
regular old cup of coffee.
So you're a moderate man.
I would say so. It's not, yeah, it's not extreme. I don't drink it all day long.
You don't do anything in extreme ways, do you? You're not an extreme kind of fella.
Extreme sports. I'll snowboard all day long,
Have you really snowboarded?
or I did one time. It was pretty fun.
Are you any good? Could you stay on your feet?
Yeah, I mean, I can, but I can also fall. I can do both of them.
Did you read the Beastie Boys book?
Yeah, I did the audiobook for it. Yeah.
I was shocked about how much I loved it.
It was great. It was fantastic.
Well, here's the thing about the Beastie Boys. I didn't like them.
And that's fair. I think they're one of those bands where it's like, I just had this conversation somewhat recently, but it's like if they started now, no fucking way would they be popular at all.
But here's the thing. If you take away the first record, if you just eliminate all the super problematic stuff, then you might have something, but there's no way they achieve that level of notoriety in like the mid to late 90s without that now horrible, then iconic first record.
Absolutely right. Yeah. They
So,
had to pretend to be, that
yeah.
for a couple years.
And I don't believe that they were pretending at all.
Fair.
The same way a lot of our peers did some certain like podcasts and stuff like that they were like, well, I'm the guy subverting the norm. But it's like, no, you're not. You're just racist.
Sure. There's a, that's a, that's Yeah, like I don't know how much I don't know the guys, but it's like, though you can say it's a joke, but it's still like it doesn't look good.
No. And I want to make it clear, like, now I have no problem with the Beastie Boys. They've clearly done more good than harm. And the book was amazing. It's maybe the best ever playlist I've read in a book or I've seen in a book.
Yes, no, I had to. I mean, I was finding new music from the book, and I made a whole playlist of all the stuff. That I liked from the book. It's loaded with great suggestions.
Some very kind soul made the official, not the official, but they went through the book and curated a giant Spotify playlist.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's
Yeah,
so
it's
great.
so good.
I'm currently working my way through that. And the reason why I wanted to chat out a little bit about the Beastie Boys is because MCA was a huge snowboarder,
Oh yeah, he was a snowboard guy.
which.
He would like do the helicopter shit and like fly out of jump out of a helicopter or something.
And that to me is both like cool and just you seem like a huge dick to me. Like you've never, no one has been more privileged than jumping out of a helicopter to snowboard. And he earned his money. Like he didn't inherit snowboard money. He made a product that was very popular and he should be rewarded for that. Like once again, I'm in the wrong here.
Yeah, and he got all that money and was like, you know what I want to do is jump out of a helicopter into some snow.
And he also won a free Tibet, like pretty cool dude.
Yeah, all around seems like that guy pretty much ruled.
So it sucks that he's dead. I'm not trying to make light of his passing. But I don't know if I would appreciate that group as much if they were still just releasing shit. Because I really, really, really enjoyed the Hot Sauce Committee Part 2. Their last record was probably my favorite Beastie Boys record. And I liked it when it came out.
Yeah, I think honestly they only put out. I mean, if we're, I think they only put out one bad album, and I think it was To the Five Boroughs. I don't think that album holds up at all.
No, it's very bad.
I did because I was just on a very long car ride, and for 3 weeks, and that got thrown on because I only had CDs for the car ride. There's no podcasts, no audiobooks, no nothing. I just had a CD player, no aux cable, and so. I have a book full of CDs from when I was in high school. And so I threw that one on, and it totally doesn't hold up at all. I mean, it didn't hold up then. I didn't like it when it came out, but I bought it anyway.
What's interesting is in the book, they actually say, like, yeah, this is our least good album. It's not bad, it's just our least good album.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, you always grade on a curve for the band's catalog, but it was not. It's not nearly as good as anything else they've ever done,
and
including the first album.
It's interesting to think of that. Well, the thing about the first album is, like, production-wise, fun-wise, it's so fun. It's just so problematic.
And it's loaded with bangers. It's like, if you look at that track list, there's a stretch in the middle where it's like, oh my God, there's like six hit songs in here. Mm-hmm. They're like right in a row. It's crazy.
And I'm currently going through their video catalog too. It's those videos are great. It's so funny to me that then No Sleep Till Brooklyn, they're making fun of rock bands, and like, what, 5 years later they're doing Gratitude, like the most like worst true musicians video possible.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, Gratitude is just like a Pink Floyd video.
Yeah, they're literally on a roof. They're doing Beatles shit.
Yeah, they're they can do whatever they wanted, I guess. That's the whole point of the band, is that, like, whatever, we'll do whatever we feel like, and confidently enough to get away with it. And well, you know, just well enough to get away with it.
And now, looking back as a not fan, as someone that could appreciate it for, like, I feel like I'm a little bit too young to grow up with them. You know what I mean? Like, Intergalactic didn't mean a shit to me. It was just, like, a video that was never not on MTV when I was 14. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, looking back, I could say, oh, they're great. Like, they followed their muse completely. They took a lot of weird turns. They did everything right after starting in a place that wasn't inherently bad. They just made some unfortunate decisions, and they clearly remedied their past, and they made up for it. And now I'm the dick for not embracing them. You know what I mean?
For sure. I mean, I don't know if you're a dick for not liking a band. That's not that big of a deal. There's tons of great bands I don't give a shit about.
Sure, sure. But, like, I think that their most recent record, the 2011 release, is great. And so, whatever. That's not the point. The point is, the thing that's on Twitter today that's not related to the Washington Post bug problem is the Chappelle special, which came out this week. Roughly the same age as the Beastie Boys, those gentlemen. I feel like it's the exact opposite of growth.
So I just watched it yesterday. I watched the new special called Sticks and Stones.
Yep.
And it's like, I all I could keep thinking of was, like, as a stand-up, you just get this time. You get your own time.
Mm-hmm.
And you really ought to make the best use of it. And I think Dave Chappelle did. And I think he's one of the most talented stand-ups that's ever done stand-up comedy.
Sure.
And he is just, like, kind of flailing in a different time right now. You know what I mean? Like, the stuff, it's like you can't take away the fact that someone is a naturally, like, charismatic or funny person, but it's just like, man, the new stuff that he's talking about, I'm just like, oh, man, dude, you sound so fucking old.
Hold on. That's the thing about it. It's like almost 70 minutes. It's between an hour and 70 minutes. Not all of it's bad.
No. I mean, he's a good stand-up.
So, and I want to say, like, even the subject matter, I'd say more than 75% of it doesn't sound like a crazy old man. I shouldn't say crazy, just an old man.
Yeah, just kind of like old guy stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, Norm Macdonald's one of my favorite old man comics, and you could be an old man and funny and just not be on the wrong side of history.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's also, you know, you could have a conversation about what side of history Norm will be looked at.
I don't think he'll be looked at all.
Man, because, yeah, that's the thing. It's like there is something funny about being, you can be like, willfully and knowingly just pushing buttons. You know what I mean? Like, obviously a lot of the stuff that Chappelle is getting, taking heat for is his, jokes about trans people, which is like, yeah, he should be taking heat for that stuff. But it looks like me observing whatever that special was, it feels like in his head, he's just like, I'm just playing around. I'm just joking with you guys. Mm-hmm. And it's like, sure, you can say that, but it also isn't helpful or good or the right time or any of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he's like a straight bigot, but I think he thinks it's just like a playful joke, and it's like, hey.
Now we have to break down what is a bigot.
Sure. Yeah. I guess we could do that. I mean, I don't think he's like hateful towards a group of people. I think he just thinks it's like a joke.
I go to therapy. I'm very grateful. I go to therapy. Back to the gratitude idea with the Beastie Boys here, but something that I like to remind myself and I bring up in therapy quite a bit is I really don't care about your motivations if we're dead, because the difference between manslaughter and first degree murder only matters to the person going to jail, not the dead person.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you on that. I don't think it like absolves them of shit.
Yeah. And I don't really, the thing is like, I really don't give a shit about the trans stuff being funny or not. I mean, clearly we're probably both on the same page if it's not funny. And but like, I'm not saying Chappelle's horrible forever. It's just, you sound like an old idiot. And this reminds me of our last conversation about Seinfeld. Not a lot of cool billionaires out there. Not a lot of cool, detached, crazy entertainers out there either.
Yeah, you know, like I feel like you can trace Chappelle's kind of you know, from at least I can say from the point where I was like really into what he was doing and then to where I was not anymore, is I think it's when he started having like 8-hour stand-up sets. And it's just like, what the fuck? What are you doing?
Clearly, we both like the show and the stand-up and Half-Baked and all that stuff. I loved the Block Party movie.
Yeah, his first 2 hours and then, like, you know, old stuff from Def Jam and HBO and all that. It's like all his old sets from that era and the Chappelle show and everything I was very into. But I think there is – and I completely understood him leaving the show. And everything about that I was on his side about.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is something about you get into this ego thing that makes you think that you can do like 8-hour sets or whatever the hell that is. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm kind of torn about that though, because if you know you're getting into that, I think it's totally fine. If the audience knows like, hey, you might need to take tomorrow off of work and this is going to happen, I'm cool with that.
It's if your audience is cool with it, you can kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I think that there should be some internal filter about your indulgence.
Okay. What about the cell phone thing? The no cell phone in the theater aspect of the show.
Oh, I'm all for that, and I'm actually pretty sympathetic towards his situation regarding that specifically.
Okay. Why?
Because he gets singled out and reported on more than anybody else doing stand-up, where it's like, you're burning his act by writing a paper, you know, writing something about it in the paper or recording it or whatever. And it's like, hey, I'm trying to work on an act here and you're giving away all my jokes and they're not done. And, you know, I think that is not helpful for someone creating a good stand-up act.
What is helpful? Would it be helpful for Chappelle? Would it be helpful for Louis? Would it be helpful for people like that to just make their own theater and stop going to a place that's a regular comedy club because they're going to get reported on? Should they create their own world to thrive?
That's crazy.
I'm just asking a question because I don't think that's crazy at all. Because I know we've talked about this before. My ideal room is a room I've never even been in, which is Largo, or in Chicago, the Hideout. To have a playroom, that to me is the ideal. And if you could have the funds, which these gentlemen obviously do, why not just do that?
I mean, if you had like, you know, they're both of those dudes type of money, I don't know why you wouldn't, I guess. But I mean, that's just not a thing anybody else can do. That's all.
Well, that's not true in any way whatsoever. You can do that. You just have to not do it at a standard comedy club.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's the thing, though, is that you can't. There's part of it that you do need to kind of blindside an audience at a comedy club and people that aren't expecting what you're delivering, you know? That's part of just what makes something funny. Is the expectation versus what is delivered. So if you have a room that's like, this is the Dave Chappelle room, and it's like people always know they're going to get Dave Chappelle.
But how is it any different thing than people going to a place that they know he's going to be at?
I guess it's not different than that, but it is different than if you just like, well, I don't know. It's hard once you're super famous.
Exactly.
Once
that's
you're
what I'm saying.
Him,
once you're
him
at a
or,
certain
or Louis.
Level, I'm not saying everyone should do this, but once you're at a certain level, if you actually don't want to get essentially spoiled while you're working on your demos, if you need a room to create, if you need a rehearsal space, you kind of should set it up on your own and not use established clubs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't even tell if that's the right way, though. I'm not sure if that's. I guess it would be fine, but I think that just kind of furthers you down an indulgent path. But
how is this already not a crazy indulgent path?
I don't. It is, and I hate it. it is, and you have to be totally fucking insane to be able to do it.
Who? Okay, so. The reason why I keep thinking about the Beastie Boys is because the Beastie Boys, I only learned this from the book, created their own little world in L.A. post Paul's Boutique, where they had like a rehearsal space / offices for Grand Royal / skate park and basketball court, where they like made their own world, right?
Yeah.
That doesn't seem to exist in comedy. And I think that it's fair to say the Beastie Boys at a certain point were or currently are, whatever you want to call it, at like the Jerry Seinfeld, Dave Chappelle level of music.
Yeah, that's similar like heights of, you know, how much you can ascend in your field. Yeah.
So they
mentioned all that stuff, and they made their own magazine and whatever, and they're like, we had to stop because it made, you know, it lost tons of money and it was hard to do.
Sure. And I'm not saying that I want to read Seinfeld's magazine, but I think it's fair to say that what kept the Beastie Boys from turning into bigger assholes and going the exact opposite route of the first record was surrounding themselves with stuff that and people that they liked that might not have been in the exact same circle. They made their world smaller by bringing in everyone else. Does this make sense?
Yeah. I mean, like we just with the Beastie Boys, like, oh, we have our own. We're making a community, basically.
Exactly. Once you're making a community, you have to be a little bit more thoughtful of everyone in the community, and you can't say crazy bigoted shit.
Sure, yeah, that's all part of it. That's the point of the community, is that hopefully it will open everybody up, and yeah.
And isn't that the point of all live entertainment? Isn't that the point of going out to a thing?
I don't know if that's the point. I mean, you could very much argue there's a huge market for super right-wing speakers right now.
No, but those people,
and that's entertainment to people, and their whole point is
but those people, no, I you're proving my point. Those people are looking for community. They found that community. They like the message of that community.
Sure, but I don't think it's like an inviting place.
It depends on how you look. It depends on your gender. Depends on how you identify. But what I'm saying is we get to choose who we want in our communities. And the decisions in the most recent Chappelle special is very different than the decisions in the last 30 years of the Beastie Boys career. And it seems like those divides should not be so big. But they are.
So do you think there's anybody in the stand-up game that is doing it the right way, aging into being kind of a rich elder statesman ambassador for the idea of this, of the form, and then they're doing it right?
Mulaney.
Okay.
Mulaney and Kroll. That's it.
And they're both very good, and they're both, from, you know, all accounts, super nice dudes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so, yeah.
The Mulaney special, I still think, was the best Netflix special of 2018.
Yeah, it was very good.
And I think at this point, unfortunately, Netflix is like the only platform that really matters when it comes to comedy specials. I mean, Nanette was also on Netflix, the same people that released the most recent Aziz special, the most recent Chappelle special. So they own everything. And Mulaney special is perfect. It opens with John Bryan That's another thing I wanted to discuss. The self-serious quotes that are taken completely out of context at the start of every Chappelle special is one of my favorite aspects of it.
Dude, yeah. Well, see, okay. I very much remember, this is like very early on after I had met you, you asked me if I thought stand-up comedy was an art, and I said no, and you said good. And that is, I think about that when I see like the kind of shit that like Chappelle does, where it's like, oh, he thinks that this is important, like big capital I, this is important. And it's like, no, it's not, dude. It's not important. It's just some jokes.
I don't Why remember you asking it like you that at all.
Oh, yeah. No, that was, I forget. I was on, I think I was just on You Need Them, Everybody. And then that was just like, I forget what the line of questioning beyond that was. But I remember that being asked. And it was just like, yeah, no, it's not. It's just goofs. It's just jokes.
So I was going to text you this, but it felt, I want to say it's Rich Little. I don't know. The comic from like the 50s or 60s that read the lyrics of Tutti Frutti by Little Richard. You know what I'm talking about?
I mean, I know Rich Little and I know the song Tutti Frutti, and I don't really know the bit. I don't know.
It's some classic bit. It's a real hacky thing to do because like you take any lyrics out of context, everything sounds silly. So it's just like some old white guy being a dick about one of like the greatest performers of all time. Little Richard.
Yeah, you just look like a nerd by doing that.
But what I was going to text you, like, I don't, would it be funny if I read like a preamble to a, have you ever seen Life Poetry?
Yes, I have.
If you've ever seen Life Poetry, or any spoken word for the most part, a lot of the times the preamble is longer than the actual piece of art. So if there's a 40-word poem, sometimes there's like a 4-minute introduction about what the poem is about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it might be interesting to find one of the most self-serious preambles to some super important poetry catalog poem, and then just read the lyrics to like Red Hot Chili Peppers' Under the Bridge.
Yeah, or even like one of their even worse songs.
Yeah, whatever. And but then I was like, well, wait, that's like kind of hacky. And isn't Anthony Kiedis like winning at that point? You know what I mean? It's like I like Flea.
Yeah, there's no matter what, if you have like a take like that, you are just acknowledging somebody's cultural influence and then like looking like a dork for trying to poke a little hole in it or something.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, someone's having fun with that. I don't know. Do we need to like deconstruct why Anthony Kiedis is not the best lyricist?
But you know what? I was watching the Conor McGregor documentary, and like all of a sudden, Anthony Kiedis is in it for like a second.
What is he talking about? Are they buds? What's the deal?
No, he was just like at the fight. He's like, that was a great fight. It's like, how does this contribute at all to the Conor McGregor storyline? Whatever. So the point is
that means nothing. Well, whoever's making a documentary just is like a famous person. Let's talk.
And well, it was produced by the Conor McGregor people, which made it even funnier.
They just had to have Anthony Kiedis in there.
You gotta have Kiedis.
Star of the movie The Chase. And what else was he in?
He was in Point Break for Idaho, a sec. Or was that just Flea?
I don't remember. I've actually never seen that one, so I don't know.
It's good. It's very, very depressing.
Oh, great. I love it.
Yeah, Gus Van, mid-career. Is that early? That's technically early career Gus Van Sant at this point, because he's still with us.
That's early days.
Anyways, yeah, the Chappelle special opens with Kendrick Lamar, and then it goes, Pulitzer Prize winner or some bullshit. It's like, Kendrick Lamar is not here. It's not a Kendrick Lamar concert.
No, it's not.
So
none of that shit fucking anybody that has like the opening like vignette to your to the stand-up special, they're nearly universally dog shit.
I feel
like
bad.
The percentage is like 99.9.
Well, if it's in the Mulaney one's perfect.
I don't even remember his, which is that bodes well for it. I don't even recall what it was.
It's not serious at all. He's with his dog backstage, and then the lady's like, "Are you ready? Follow me." And then they follow them through like the weird parts of Radio City Music Hall, and then he like they push him. He walks on a platform, and then the show starts. It's perfect.
Okay. Yeah. No. It's like I guess I'm talking about like when they do like. I guess this doesn't qualify for the Chappelle one, but like when they do a sketch or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Man, those are like I highly recommend if anybody can find it, look up the one for John Panette, R.I.P. His special "I'm Starving." It's the absolute pinnacle of like what? Why did you do this for an opening vignette? And you know what? I'm just going to describe it beat for beat because I don't care if I'm spoiling anything. So pause and look it up if you want to see it firsthand. But it's him in a hotel room. And he's just like kind of sitting down, and he's like looking a little anxious. And then a room service like butler wheels in a cart with the
Hold
silver
on,
dome.
A room service butler?
Yeah, he's like I want to say like dressed in a suit or something.
Oh, okay.
Like he looks like a butler.
So they made
I
up
think.
A job.
Yeah, no, they absolutely. It's all yeah. So he wheels in a little cart, silver dome, and he lifts the lid of the dome, and it is a small salad. And then John looks directly to camera and says, "Salad? I'm starving." And then they cut to him on stage, starting the act.
That's great. I love it.
It's perfect. It's like the worst. It's like efficiently bad. It's like it's condensed. It's short. It's sweet, and it's. And it makes no sense. It's like you get to order your own food. You can order anything. You ordered the salad.
Is that the worst part of Nanette as well? That intro?
I don't even recall what hers was.
Hers
what
wasn't
what was in
serious,
the...
but it's like her quiet at home, I think, with a pet.
Okay. I think like if you can, that's the thing is if you shoot for like a big gag, you're going to fuck it up. I mean, you're likely going to not land it. If you go for something mellow, like it's me with a dog or something, then you can get away with the fact that you're like, well, it wasn't supposed to be funny. Chill
then
out.
Why do it?
I don't know. Is it so people can like in a split second, basically be like, oh, you have a dog. You can't be bad.
You like dog. I like dogs.
I like dogs. You're a good person.
Final thing I was wondering is, at the end of the Chappelle special, this one and definitely at least one of the other Netflix ones, I think all of them, it ends with essentially a photo collage during the credits. And what I really want to know is, will anyone now ask all of the people that were in the end credits their thoughts about the LGBTQ community?
Oh, yeah. I don't even recall. I think I turned it off before credits. But was it anybody that you're like, I would like to know their opinion about that?
Oh, yeah.
Who
John
was
Stewart.
In it? Oh, for real?
Yeah.
I mean, he is at this point. He is so out of the public eye. He doesn't ever have to talk again if he doesn't want to.
The only thing Stewart comes out of off of his farm for is to fight for the 9/11 heroes. So, like, he's been on the right side of history since ever. I really want to know if he has to answer about this because I don't know if you remember. He was one of the biggest like, what are you talking about when it comes to Louis C.K.? Some kid asked him at the University of Chicago.
I do remember that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. It's like, yeah, everyone knows. What are you talking about? So I wonder now if everyone in this, like probably like 30 photos, if any of them have to answer for the stuff that Chappelle says. I don't think it's good or bad. I'm just wondering.
I don't think anybody will, and I don't think it's their responsibility. I think it's you know, hey, I took a picture with my friend, and then he went on to say something dumb later. I don't know. Like that happens.
That's fair.
I mean, that could be everyone's answer, and that would be extremely adequate.
So once we're done with this, are you going to go snowboarding today?
Yeah, I'm gonna hit the old powder. I'm gonna hit the old LA powder.
Come in. Bonsoir. Je suis très fin. Merci. Salad? I'm starving!